Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Let us pray. Heavenly Father, in today's busy world, we take time to listen. Let's take time to listen to your voice. Grant wisdom to our elected officials in our state, our nation, that they may make judicious decisions in the wake of the Parkland school shooting in order for school children everywhere to have a safe environment for learning. Grant your continued consolation to those who lost loved ones and those injured in that tragedy. And in the days ahead, may hope come back to all of those so dramatically impacted in the wake of this event. Lead our citizens and city staff today in providing helpful input in all decisions made here in this meeting. May we listen to your voice and guidance in the items coming before our city commission. Grant a spirit of cooperation and wisdom to our mayor and commissioners that their decisions may be fair and just, we pray in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, George. Randy, any changes to the agenda?
No, sir.
Okay, seeing none, we'll look for a motion to approve.
So.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. My first opportunity, we have the Winter Park High School Foundation. I saw Vince walk in. Want to join me up here? Julie, is that it? Do you guys like that?
Sure. I'm just going to say a couple of things real quick. Thank you for letting us be here this afternoon. My name is Vince Fury. I'm the president of the Winter Park High School Foundation. And for those of you that aren't familiar with the foundation was started back in the early 90s to support things that go on at Winter Park High School that just fall well above the OCPS budget line. And you know, over the years, we've had a great deal of success, and if some of you recall, we started our Restore the Roar fundraising event at Showalter Field 3 years ago, and really primarily to support the track field scoreboard project at Showalter Field. But what that really did was a real catalyst for a lot of growth at the Winter Park High School Foundation. So if you look back over this last four-year period, we would have invested about $1.3 million in capital projects back to Winter Park High School. And it's kind of appropriate. And we just completed our third annual Restore the Roar this past Saturday. And it's kind of appropriate that I'm here today to present a check to the city from last year's proceeds. We still haven't gotten to this year yet. It was interesting because if you haven't had an opportunity to be at the event, it's a fantastic event, but people kept coming to me and saying to me over and over, I don't know how you are able to do this. I don't know how you've been able to do as much as you've been able to do in the last 4 years. And I had a very easy answer. It's because we have people like Julie Champion and the other 17 trustees and committee chairs on the board that have no self-interest whatsoever. You take those 19 people working in the interest of all students as a whole, you blend that with our amazing community and how generous they are, and that's what we're able to achieve. So again, thank you for having us here today. One of the commitments we made as a board was to continue to reinvest in Showalter and future improvements to the facility. So I think Julie has it. So we'd like to present to you a check for $25,000 towards the continued improvements at the locker room project primarily to continue to improve that facility. And once we finish balancing out the budget from this year, we'll be back here in a month or so to readdress you again. So again, thank you for having us here.
Thank you.
I want to thank the commissioners as well that attended, and I've actually got Greg's auction items that he won right here, so we appreciate that. We'll get this to you. Thank you again.
Yeah, just a quick thing, folks. The Winter Park High School Foundation came a couple years back to talk about fixing up Showalter Field. They were the driving force behind it. They've been with us, partnered shoulder to shoulder, a four-partner deal to get that facility up to the standards that it's at today. It set new standards in the area for not only for us but other high schools. You guys stepped up. You're always there. And we appreciate everything you do for the community. So thank you very much for everything. And we're always happy to get a check. You're always welcome back. Yeah. This is great. Yeah. Can we do, we'll just do it right here? For those of you that, that were unaware of it or did not attend, it was another great event. Different theme this year, but a great event for the Restore the Roar. So thanks, guys. Randy, City Manager's report.
I have no report. I'd be glad to answer questions.
Questions for the City Manager?
I do have one. Randy, a few weeks back, we talked about the after-action report for Irma, and we were going to go back and look at the huge environment of suggestions and boil it down to a few we could track. Is that still on schedule?
We're working on that, yes.
Can you give us an estimated time here, Randy, that we'll see that?
Well, I was going to bring it back as part of the budget for those items that, that cost money. I think that
the residents would like to see, because you're working hard. And I'd like for you to be able to get credit for that.
Okay. Yeah, I also think there's been motion. The electric utility is taking care of some certain areas.
There's a lot of things going on.
Yeah, it'd be great. Okay, great. Any more questions? Mr. Seidel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Randy, the Orange Avenue speed study, we had talked about looking at that from the staff level first. Is anything going on with that?
Troy, you get an update on that?
Can we get an update by next meeting, please? There are some very concerned residents specifically in that area in Orange. It's as evidenced by that one person who sped through there. We need to come up with some thoughts and ideas on how to control speed there. Thank you. Okay. Dan?
No report.
No. Any questions for the city attorney?
It was easy.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. I saw Mayor McDonald from Maitland just sneak in. Dale, I have the mic open if you'd like to address the commission before we get into the meat of this item, this agenda. Well, against better judgment. Welcome. Thank you for the partnership that we have with Maitland.
Thank you. We're truly blessed with all three, with the city of Maitland and Eatonville, the town of Eatonville and Winter Park. And I want to thank you a lot for the forward thinking that's involved with seeing us as who we are. We are North Orange County, and we are and should be acting more in concert for one another and for to give ourselves greater opportunities to succeed. This particular resolution, which I'm led to understand is no such thing's ever happened before, but if that's the case, then that's too bad because it should have been done a long time ago. So.
You're specifically referring to 11B, right, for people, the between the town of Eatonville, city of Maitland, regarding
whatever may be the resolution that that we put together that you've been supportive of, and Mayor Cole, who I was just trying to reach on the way over, stuck, so can't get here, so I promised I would get here at least late.
Okay.
And speak in support of this. So it's the right thing to do, and we all know it. It's a no-brainer. I wish all the decisions we had were quite so straightforward, but thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Okay, non-action items. We have 7A. Chief, is this you?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners.
Good afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be back in Winter Park after being spending a week in snowy and then hot Washington, D.C. It was kind of crazy last week.
Thank you for going up there and representing us, though, yeah, Chief.
Thank you. Wait for my slides to come up. What we want to do today is what you asked us to do back in the middle of last year when you approved us moving forward with the idea of a community paramedicine program. And you asked us at that time to come back after the first year and let you know how we're doing. and to see if we're meeting those goals. And I'm very happy to tell you today, and what we're going to show you here briefly in these next couple of slides is going to kind of support that. I have with us today really the driving force behind what's happened, because it's not me going out and saying, well, I have gone out and seen some of these residents. It's not me that's doing it on a daily basis. Our community paramedic, Tony Braish, is here, willing to answer any questions. Our partnership, while informal at this point, with the Winter Park Health Foundation, is we've been shoulder to shoulder with them over the last many months through this. Diane Sylvie's here. Appreciate her help and support. And Acting Chief, Assistant Chief Rodriguez is here to, has also been really driving this program as well. So I want to thank them for their work on this to this point. If you remember in our discussions, we said this wasn't just something that came out of thin air, that this was something that was driven out of our community-driven strategic plan from 2016. The feedback that we got from our residents and internal partners were driving us towards coming up with something that put us in front of the 911 call, that we saw the need, the needs were happening continuously. We were getting calls from people who really had nowhere else to turn. And we ran on a number of these individuals that we knew, our paramedics knew, that if just some bit of intervention could have happened with them before the 911 call, that it would not have happened. They would have been able to manage their own medical situation, or with some assistance be able to do that. And you're going to see from some pretty dramatic statistics that that's exactly what's happened. You directed us to keep it to somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30 residents, and that's where we've been. Some have entered the program and successfully kind of exited the program. Others are still in there and are on our maintenance program, I guess as you would call it. They have to be city residents, which all of the participants have been. And they were driven from the original group, from the ones that had multiple 911 calls. And we shared with you back then, the statistics were pretty dramatic, that we had really a short number of people, short list of people who were calling a tremendous amount of times. And that, as we all know, tied up our resources, even though they weren't necessarily emergent calls, we were tied up on that, unavailable for calls in other parts of the city. So the goal being, one, get them better care up front where they can manage their own issues, get them the assistance they needed, and then reduce the amount of times that we're committed to helping them get through the issues that they were dealing with. So far, program enrollment has been people that were 55 and over, and I think you can probably understand we're not going to be able to share with you dramatic details about each of these situations, but I will share with you that this is a citywide program. This is not a one neighborhood, one segment of the community, or anything else. I think you'd be very pleased to know that there's not a neighborhood in the city that's not seeing the impacts of this. So it is a citywide program. We're not helping in one neighborhood any more than another. So if, again, 55 and older, if they call 911 multiple times in a year, that's where Tony started his work. We did get referrals directly from our firefighter paramedics who ran on patients on a routine basis, and then referral from family, friends, or neighbors. Those were also included. Most of Tony's work has been with their management of their medication. You can imagine that either they got medications given to them that they don't know how to take, or maybe they didn't hear exactly what the physician said when they gave the medications out. A lot of these people are not the people that go to pick up the medication. They have somebody else do it for them, so they're not directly talking to the pharmacist. And they then forget. They just either, you know, didn't remember to take it. Some of them are having memory issues along with their other problems. So they don't take their medication, hence they don't get the care, hence they call 911. So just basic medication management has been a huge part of what Tony's been able to accomplish. Fall prevention, a lot of injuries were occurring even in private homes and apartments and residences from them just not knowing how best to lay out their home, and little things that could be removed, rugs, slip, fall hazards that could be taken out were addressed or are being addressed. Basic nutrition issues, Tony's not a nutritionist, but it's obvious that we can make connections to people that are. and we can get them the help that they need. And it's pretty evident, even from before this program, that the really thousands of people that our paramedics run on a regular basis, you could tell that nutrition could be a problem that is causing them to have the other issues that they're experiencing. And then honestly, at the end, if you don't think that people call 911 and just want somebody to talk to and they want to see some people, you're missing the point, because that happens a significant amount of times. They don't have a true medical emergency, but they're lonely and they want somebody to be able to contact with. And they don't have a friendly voice at the other end of the phone. And to be quite honest with you, Tony's become that to a few people. And that has kept them from, and that was part of this. We knew that was going to be part of it, because they were calling 911 to get that conversation and get that contact. So I'm going to blow that up a little bit so you can see a little bit better the statistics. This is over from 2008 through a projection forward to 2022. You can see the top line is our total calls for service. Last year we crested somewhere around 5,300 calls. You can see that we're continuing, if the statistics continue in the same direction, the calls are continuing to increase. The middle line on that is our EMS calls, our medical calls that we respond to. So what we're anticipating is it continue. When you see the next numbers, you'll see, well, our hope is that we're going to be able to stop that trend. If you look at the bottom line, those are our fire responses. They flattened out completely, and it's through, you know, code enforcement, education, better buildings. We're able to do a whole lot more with fire prevention than we've ever been able to do in the past. So we see the trend for EMS coming in that same direction. But we thought it would be important to try to project that out for you to be able to see what call volumes. And as you can tell from the fire responses, I don't want to tell you that we got that under control, but we know the risks and we know what we're doing to try to help that. We think we can do the same thing with EMS, which in turn will bring down the top line as well. So just to let you know, the sixth highest callers in the program from January through June were 60, called 62 times. Volumes of calls for those six residents, and that's what we just wanted to highlight today, because that was the biggest group. From start of the program until the end of 2017, they dropped 63%. So you can see these are the six residents, some calling, you know, 18 to 20 times, some eight, you know, individual times. They have all dropped significantly. And this is what we were looking for in the towards the impact to our services. Obviously, these individuals are doing much better. They're getting the help that they need. They're not only getting it from Tony, but they're getting it through what Tony's able to do for them and getting them the help that they need. And sometimes it's a matter of just, hey, this is who you need to contact. You know, he's become that conduit for them to be able to do that, which in turn has helped us in our availability, our unit availability for other emergencies. So I don't want to tell you out of 8 months of data that this is going to be the continued perfect scenario, but we kind of knew this was the biggest low-hanging fruit that we could fix and the biggest impact we'd get. We just didn't realize it would be that quick. So it has dropped significantly. And going forward, and just to conclude, going forward, we hope to continue our partnership with the Health Foundation. We just see that as a huge partner. That we have the same, this project and what they do. And I don't want to speak for Diane. You obviously can ask her questions. But their partnership has been valuable to just us thinking the right things and making the right connections with the health the services in the community. So I know that they want to be a part of this as we go forward, and we're looking forward to more growth with Health Foundation. The MedID program, which is a program that's going to allow us to know better and track better their medications for individuals to be able to say, instead of getting it after they've run out or that they haven't been able to get it, that we will know what's going on with their conditions and their medications. Telehealth is another aspect of community paramedicine or mobile integrated health care that's becoming very popular, and where they have the ability to be able to, we have the ability to be able to monitor particular situations with the patient over the internet. So we can see whether they have, right? I mean, you've probably seen the commercials now where somebody can take their thumbs and stick it on a device and you get a heart rhythm out of that. I mean, that's the type of technology that we're headed to in a very short period of time to be able to better control people's situations. And again, goal first, better health care, second goal. 911 needs to be for 911 and not these other situations. The last bullet there is something that we're seeing a lot of programs begin to work towards, and that's to get a hold of the hospital readmits. While that's not a real focus of our original program, it was more for our residents and for what it was going to do for our service. I will tell you that the hospital readmits affect us as well, because they have to get to the hospital somehow, and most of them call 911 and want to be readmitted. But most programs like this that are growing in the country are seeing that the hospital readmits and the management of those is a way to help fund the program. So we're going to continue to explore those with your blessings and working with Mr. Knight, and just make sure that we're able to find a way to sustain this program if it is continues the way in the direction we'd like to see it continue. With that, we'll answer any questions that you have.
Great. Any questions? Sprinkle.
So is it scalable?
To the point where can one paramedic handle certain number of patients?
Yeah.
Or that? I don't want to leave that up to Tony's answer, but I would think that obviously it is. Right now, he's able to manage the amount of patients that we have in the program, but certainly, more is going to, I won't say it's going to require additional people, but right now I think it's manageable. It's scalable to the point where we'll be able to control the growth of it. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to be, that's going to take over any one aspect of the department. Or be a yell for more people is what I'm saying. I think there's enough community support out there that there's others that could help us in networking through other systems that are already in place in the community, not only the Health Foundation, but the Florida Hospital System has always been there for us and been in some of the conversations with us. So I think there's others that would be able to help us if it did grow to the point where we needed some assistance like that.
There's a lot of retired medical professionals in this community.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Sit down. Thank you. Chief, on your one slide, you had showed the six most often callers. How many folks are actually in the program? And then from that, you talked about now, if you have a call and the folks on the scene say, hey, we really need to get someone involved, you may prevent that person from becoming the 8 or 20. You're not getting those anymore because you're spotting them right away. So are you think that's happened to 10 people, 15 people? Is that... because that's kind of not caught in your numbers.
Well, I think the 20, the 25 to 30 is realistic, and that's, we've tried to not, to honor your direction and not grow it any further than that. But if somebody did call, some of them are in the program for a day. He's right. Able to address the issue with one action. So we don't necessarily count those as being somebody that was in it and out of it. We do track that, obviously, but the ones that are on a more constant monitoring or regular monitoring is more in that 25 to 30 range.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I do have a question. Well, have you any sense from your experience so far as to what the demand might be? If you're limited to 25, what's the sense of what the value proposition for both the patient and the city where it makes sense? How many people do you think in the city feel, given that we don't have hands-on experience, but we have a little bit of experience?
I won't say unfortunately, I think that's going to increase, because we're not dealing with anybody that's living in an assisted living facility. We're not dealing with anybody. We're dealing with people that are in their private residences.
Well, the question
and that number is growing. So if we don't focus it to, and I like the idea of focusing it on the people that we have direct contact with.
Yeah.
I think if we grow it to, back to Commissioner's question, if we grow it anything outside of that, then we're going to start to have growth issues.
Well, the question is this. You have the 911 calls, which is the first source. The second source is the paramedics on the scene see someone who they think is a candidate.
Correct.
Right? And the third source is referrals from friends and family or whatever. In that context alone, you're going to see more and more people who qualify under the scope of what's been approved so far. Do you have any idea, any sense of what that might be after a year of doing this, to say, okay, we've seen another 500 people on the EMS side of things, on the 911 responses, and
Are there more who are calling more frequently who we haven't yet picked up into this program? And what might that number be?
I would say first answer is yes, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are people that we, and as the program becomes more comfortable to the department, I think more paramedics are going to realize that they saw that patient that night and, hey, Tony, the program probably could have helped them. A year ago, it would not have been an issue that they would have even explored. But now we know we have something that may help that person from being the one that calls, you know, 20 times. So I don't know that I can put an exact number on it, but I think it's going to be related. It's going to be held back to his ability to be able to manage those people. And like I mentioned, some people are in it for one issue. They needed, you know, to understand how their medications are handled. They're in and out.
Well, I'm trying to think down the road in terms of the longer-term opportunity, really.
Sure.
And, you know, there are many things at play here in terms of administrative and bureaucratic requirements, the fire department versus the hospital's rules and regulations versus what the Health Foundation can do legally and otherwise. But in the end, the concept offers the opportunity to really understand what specific services can be provided and compensated for, because at the end of the healthcare train, they're going to save money, whether it's a hospital admit that the hospital may not, you know, be too happy isn't there, but it saved Medicare $10,000, right?
Right.
So there's a way to get back through that chain based on experience of analyzing these people and the experiences we have with them to try to see if we can't really innovate in terms of creating arguments in favor of certain policy changes, maybe at the hospital or otherwise,
sure,
that can credibly be used to improve the health of our citizens while at the same time saving money in the healthcare system.
I think a couple things are going to happen. I think that once these programs become more known to the community, we're going to see some interest. We're going to see not interest, but people that go, oh, if I can count on them, I'm not going to call them 911 all the time. They'll be that group. And like I said, they'll be the group that falls into the program and then gets taken their issues, get taken care of, and then they'll complete that or go back to self-management, you know, of their situation. So I think the volume, and all of those will have, and that's why we've tried to keep Tony a little bit flexible. And, okay, let's see what you can handle. And he's tracking that very closely to be able to say what types of patients he can really need to be on a continuous maintenance thing and that he needs to contact regularly, the ones that he needs to just refer to somebody else. So I think that's going to continue to be the mantra of this going forward until we establish some other services or other things like the hospital rechecks. And, you know, are there other things that we can do with his availability that assist us, gets our residents better health care and reduces our cost of service?
Okay.
I mean, those, I think, will still be the goals of the program that I will pass forward to the next administration. So,
thank you. Commissioner Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Jim, I think this is a wonderful program, certainly for our residents, but looking into the future, the hospitals are already inundated, the social service networks are already inundated, and the question becomes how do we put parameters around what we're going to be able to do as a community? And for me, that's a big question here as we move forward. Are we structured to refer people to existing social agencies? Are we working with our hospitals to make sure that at some point the partnership becomes a financial partnership as well as just a shared services partnership? Because it's a wonderful program. It's an absolute need. Winter Park's population and the United States' population is aging quickly. And the question is, how much of the cost can be absorbed at a municipality as opposed to through social agencies and through hospitals? And that's going to be the tough one.
Well, I think through, and how we wanted to build the foundation of this, and believe me, your support made that happen when we started this. We didn't want to go out there with the ask on the first meeting, and Diane knows that we haven't asked you anything yet. So we didn't want to go with the ask. We wanted to go with the benefit. Here's how it's working, and believe it or not, I mean, Florida Hospital has come to us. other people said, hey, we want to. So I see that door opening very soon, but we want to manage how much, and I mean, it's got to be a benefit for us. It's got to be.
Two simple questions. Mm-hmm. One of them is, how many other municipalities are you aware of that have implemented this? And the second question would be, what population are you, and I know you said it's across every neighborhood, are you seeing it more in single-family residents where people are trying to stay age in place in their single-family homes, or is it apartments, or is it?
It's half and half.
It really is everywhere.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it truly is. I've got half that are single-family, and then I've got half that are low-income or.
Tony, would you just do me a favor, just say your name for the record?
So yeah, Tony Braish.
Thank you.
Community paramedic.
So, it's a wonderful service.
Yeah, and your first question, what was your first question was?
Well, just how many other municipalities have already implemented programs like this?
There is four besides us in the state of Florida, just in the state.
And do we know, is this something that's national?
Oh, yeah.
And the four in Florida are us and, you know?
Sunrise, Satellite Beach, Manatee County, and us. Maybe Seminole County, I think, is getting ready to start one.
I think it's an awesome program. Thank you to the Winter Park Health Foundation, too, for your participation.
Great. Thank you. First of all, Chief, thank you for this. We really appreciate it, Diane. Thank you for the partnership with Health Foundation moving forward. We just had the Winter Park High School Foundation here, so it just proves this community is better when we're all working together, and we really appreciate the partnership, so thank you. Tony, thank you specifically. I've run into people who've utilized the service and nothing but great remarks for you, so thank you. Chief, the one question I have, I think it's slide five, the EMS versus fires.
Can you go? There you go.
Yes.
I see you projecting out really no change in EMS, but given the numbers you just showed on this, shouldn't we see that trend downward?
Correct. This doesn't reflect any impact from this type of program. This is where we would be if we made no changes.
Yes. Okay.
Correct. The middle line there, the blue line, is the EMS only, the EMS calls.
You forecast that out.
Correct.
The impact that this is having on that.
Correct.
Okay.
So you'll be able to actually quantify.
Correct. We'll start applying this going forward, and you should, right. Hopefully we're going to see a downward trend or a leveling of those EMS calls going forward.
Great.
That's something it'd be nice to see after it's been in place.
Correct. That's what we're going to lead with them. So,
Chief, thank you. We appreciate this. We always appreciate you guys looking at things a little bit differently to serve our community. So thanks for the work. Really, really well done.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, just when you talk about the trend line that you had shown, that includes traffic accidents, right?
Yeah. All our responses.
And in the last 5 to 6 years, you know, since we came out of the recession, traffic's been up, right? It's been increasing and growing. And how much of that seems to me would be the driving force in the number of calls? Is that a fair statement or not a fair statement?
I'll be happy to get you the exact data on our responses to those and the comparisons. But this is really, you know, there's a much greater impact of these types of incidents in their frequency than our responses to motor vehicle crashes. I mean, I won't say they've been fairly consistent, but
I just meant the overall number.
Right. Well, the changes in the last several years have been more reflective of our responses to healthcare issues. They really have versus, but I'll be happy to get those for you.
Thank you, Chief. The preventative type is great.
Sure.
I know the police, Chief Deal, you're back here too. The work that Javier is doing to try to show people how to make their homes a little bit more secure too. All this preventative stuff that you all are doing out in the community on behalf of for the community is just really good work. So thank you guys.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Mr. City Manager, is this you next, or is
it's going to be Tim Egan?
Tim, where are you, bud? There you are.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I was asked to look into the development of a GIS connectivity map, and since I don't know much about GIS or connectivity, the first thing I did was go to our experts who have quite a bit of experience with that. One of the questions that I've been asked many times is, what is GIS? Essentially, it's a database-driven mapping tool. You essentially have a table behind a map that contains all the information for people that aren't familiar with it. It allows you to compare multiple features in various combinations. It essentially produces a very powerful analytical tool that you can use to identify your needs and opportunities. What GIS won't do is define those needs and opportunities, and that's really where this presentation is going to end up going. So I'm with the Parks and Recreation Department, and you might ask the next question, why is Parks and Recreation presenting this transportation-related program or presentation? One reason is that the update of the Parks Master Plan, which we're going to be bringing to you in the next couple of months, has to, under the Comprehensive Plan, address the issue of connecting city parks with bicycle lanes, paths, and trails. Another reason is the comp plan also requires that during the update we coordinate with the transportation element and the people responsible for the transportation element. And it doesn't have anything to do with that we were the last ones standing when the music stopped playing. What we found out, or what I found out, was, and kind of suspected, is that there's an extensive amount of mapping data already available. There's three very good GIS maps in existence that have almost all of the connectivity features you would want to look at. But they weren't all the same, and some had some features that the others didn't. So what we kind of worked on doing was putting those pieces together. And to do that, we relied heavily on Keith Gerhardt's in the GIS program, Allison McGillis in Planning and Zoning, and Butch Margraf in Public Works. And we took a lot of their existing work, or Keith took a lot of their existing work, and put it together into a interactive GIS connectivity map. This is kind of what it looks like, and we thought about putting a live map up there, but it kind of gets washed out on the big screen. And what we'd really like you to do is take this link and go to the map and start using it, and then give feedback as to the features you like, you don't like, what you think is helpful, or what you think would be helpful to add to the map. This is a list of the layers that are available. You can turn all of these on at the same time.
Sorry, Tim, can I interrupt for a moment?
Yes.
Could you make sure, Randy, that gets emailed? I don't think anybody wrote that down quick enough up here.
Yes, sir.
Get emailed to us, that'd be helpful.
Yeah. The items in red are things that are being added. They may already be in. I looked at it late this afternoon, and there was a lot of those were already in, but Keith is still working on some of them. We were going to email those once all of the updates have been put into it. So looking at bicycle connectivity, I'm just going to run through a couple of items and then get into what we think we need to do to follow through and move forward with the connectivity issue. We've got bike trails, which are dedicated non-vehicular traffic trails, bike lanes, bike routes, and lane share shown here. You can look in the areas where we don't have any features are very obvious when you put it up on the map. You can see there's parts of the city that have no bicycle facilities at all. But most of the facilities that are existing are not what would be the Cadillac of bike ped or ped bike mobility, and that's the recreational trails. So a lot of the areas could be updated if that's what the city wanted to do. Looking at pedestrian connectivity, this is a map of the sidewalks. The gaps aren't nearly as obvious as they are on the bicycle map. But when you look at the roads that don't have sidewalks, it becomes a little clearer. A lot of these are subdivisions that may or may not need sidewalks, but again, this just shows the different ways you can look at the data and the information that's already out there. So to us, it seemed like mapping was not the missing piece of the connectivity puzzle. It was policy, level of service, and operational policy. And the other thing that struck us was that there's really four issues that are related but not the same when you're talking about connectivity and mobility. Roads and rail, we're not really addressing in this presentation, but vehicular access is pretty good. I mean, you might not like the traffic on a particular day, but you can get anywhere in the city in your car if you want to. and the rail system provides some regional access. Pedestrian mobility, people are most interested in safety of crosswalks and consistency of features. I heard several times that there's parts of the city where it's very comfortable and inviting to walk, other parts of the city where it's not. And the people that were expressing those concerns really would like a uniform look of, or type of features available when they're walking throughout the city. Bicycle mobility, the primary issue is separation from traffic, and depending on your skill as a bicyclist and the kind of riding you like to do, that degree of separation varies from user to user. For the serious cyclists, continuity of routes, being able to get distance over destination is really what they're interested in, and the condition of the roads that they're riding on. And then there's the issue of recreational trails. For some people, being on a dedicated trail that does not have vehicles is really their only option, and they're not going to go out and bike or walk unless that's available to them. So we talked to a lot of people in the process of developing this presentation, and one thing I found out is people either think the connectivity in Winter Park is really good or they think it's terrible. And I didn't get any opinions that were in between. So if you ask, can I get to any park? Yes, you can. You can get in your car and drive to any park. Can you walk or bike to any park? You certainly can. You can get on any road legally and do that. Can you get there safely? That depended on who you asked. Some people were comfortable doing that on their bicycle. Some people were not. The opinions of what we need, some people felt that just enforcing the traffic rules and calming down the drivers that are on their cell phones and doing other things instead of paying attention to the road is all we need. Others feel we need a trail system where vehicles are not permitted, and others are perfectly comfortable riding on bike lanes. So can GIS provide us the answers? Again, not without help. We need to define the needs, we need to define our level of service that we want, and kind of determine when we want this to happen, because that'll drive how we do the funding and planning for that. So how do we move forward? One possible way is to do a workshop where we discuss using this GIS map, because it is a very powerful tool, and even though I'm kind of downplaying what it is or talking about what it can't do, in a planning scenario, you can really get into the details of it and find out what is available and what we want as a city and how to get there. So adopting a policy would be the next step, developing projects and prioritization. And having that, coming from the stormwater program where we have a prioritized list of projects and ready to go, that's really helped out with funding, getting grants. We always have grant money coming in, it seems like. And part of that reason is that the people administering those grants know that we're going to put that money to good use. So if we want to pursue grants related to connectivity and pedestrian and bicycle mobility, having that willingness to put our own resources at stake, it is going to be helpful for getting those funding sources to pay off for us. It currently feels like we're somewhat opportunistic, and there's nothing wrong with that. The stormwater program is also opportunistic. If a grant becomes available for a project out on year 5, we'll move it up to get the money.
That's right.
But the other thing that isn't so good is it seems to be more complaint-driven than policy-driven. People are calling your office, asking for sidewalks. We put a sidewalk in, but if somebody doesn't want the sidewalk, they ring the phones off the hook, and staff kind of feels a little caught in the middle as to how to address those situations. So having the level of service defined is going to help out resolving those kinds of issues. None of these are suggested levels of service. These are just the kinds of issues that we're going to get into if we want to move forward with this. The degree of signage and marking, the degree of separation from traffic. Again, we already discussed some people are comfortable riding on the road with cars, other people are not. The picture with the bike lane, they're separated from traffic. There's a line on the road, the drivers know what that means, but some people just will not get on their bike and ride in that situation. And then again, the safety considerations that, I'm sorry, let me back up 1 minute here. having criteria for conflict mediation, I think, is going to be an important part of this, and that's where I was talking about the neighborhoods with the sidewalks or wanting them versus not wanting them. We have tree issues. If we have a situation where there's a tree in a route of a sidewalk or a trail, do we want, ideally, we'd have enough room to save the tree and build the sidewalk. But there's going to be situations where we don't do that, and which is more important in that situation. And there's trees that are very spectacular and worth saving, and there's trees that could be replaced. So we need to have a method to deal with that, and one size isn't going to fit all. So even if we do develop a very detailed policy, we still need to have that flexibility built in. Some additional considerations for pedestrians. There's issues of schools and parks. Do we want to have different levels of service defined for areas within a certain distance of a school or a park? Do we want to identify routes on our GIS map only if they meet a certain level of service? Do we want to rate routes for pedestrians by the safety features? Do they have signaled crosswalks all the way from point A to point B? Things like that. Some of the opportunities, and we're not getting into specific opportunities, although there are some that are going to show up on the GIS map when you look in there, and there's a way, an interactive way for you to put ideas and opportunities that you are aware of or see into that map that everybody else will be able to look at when they open it up. We've got some roads where there's plenty of right-of-way to build a dedicated trail, but the West Orange Trail shown in the picture on the right there. But it's not just as easy as having the right-of-way. You have to look at side streets and trees and other things and do all the criteria there to meet the construction of a safe recreational trail. Neighborhood connectors, we've got some ongoing projects and some hopefully ongoing projects that will allow us to provide pedestrian and bicycle connections between neighborhoods. The upgrades to the ninth grade center pond that I believe are in the stormwater CIP will be able to accommodate neighborhood requests to put a path between the two neighborhoods to avoid getting out on a busier street and to make their walking a more pleasant experience. The parcels we acquired up on Howell Creek on the north end of town, some of the money that we are trying to shake loose to go with the purchase of those parcels might allow us to do a neighborhood connector to get school kids off of Howell Branch Road and off the Temple Trail where there's no sidewalks and get them to the Maitland schools that they attend in a much safer manner than they are able to do now. The city's recently embarked on a project to increase pedestrian and bicycle mobility with the Denning Drive improvements. There's other options and opportunities that can be taken if we steps that can be taken if we care to do so, going to one-way pairs, taking advantage of linear easements like ditches, which would most likely involve purchase of right-of-way or increasing the easement allowances to allow for that versus what their current use is. They're very specific, most of them, so you couldn't necessarily put a trail on a drainage easement unless you got those allowances from the owners of the property. There's also some digital opportunities. This map can be made into a public map. It can be interactive. The user can turn on the layers and look at the parks, the city parcels. They may be able to designate routes, look at designated routes, or even form their own routes on there. Some of these features might require an app. There's lots of apps out there for bicyclists, joggers, and things that we might be able to utilize or create our own if that was something we wanted to get into. And then the idea of developing other trail concepts such as paddling trails, walking trails for various features that would not require much in the way of infrastructure or anything, just a matter of putting them on the map, designating them formally, and possibly some signage if it was appropriate. I don't know how many of your questions I'll be able to answer, but Butch Margrath is here, and we'll give it our best shot.
Commissioner?
Yeah, no, thanks. I thought that was a very good presentation. Thank you.
What are we doing?
Well, we have an opportunity in there to schedule a workshop.
Right.
Yes, I mean, the...
Which I think would be important before we go to all the different boards so they understand what the commission's looking for.
I think when you get in and look at the map, you'll see what we're talking about is that you're going to see where the gaps are, and you're going to see what people have been asking you for, but it's not going to tell you how to fix it.
Right.
That is going to come down to policy that you're going to develop through whichever means you decide is most appropriate.
Well, I'm all in favor of us setting that up.
I'm thrilled, personally. I love to see the work that's been done. I would like to understand. I saw a draft of the mobility plan that addressed quite a bit of this. I want to make sure we're kind of in concert with the comp plan and the PED board. And even if we don't decide that all of those things are implementable, at least I want us to consciously go through that and make sure that we're catching all of those. I believe that the residents of Winter Park have expressed over and over their desire for connectivity through the city. And I think most people are more inclined toward the off-road connectivity if possible, so that it meets our demographics, both children and our older population. And I'm thrilled to see us get to this point. And the question is, whatever support we need to do, we need to get the questions clear, the scope clear, and the cost clear, so that we can make sure that it's in the capital improvements plan. And that's where I saw the missing link. I saw a list of projects in the PED and bike board plan, but I didn't understand how they were moved forward into the capital improvement plan. And that's the point that we can help with, because if it's not in the capital improvement plan, it doesn't matter how much planning you do, there's no money to do it. So that's the point I would like us to be able to help with. And we need to get these questions answered before I think we can come.
And I think as you get into it, even though things have kind of gone in fits and starts, you'll find there's a lot going on. Between Denning and the Blake Avenue work, there's some real options to get some big connections done with relatively small projects.
I think what Tim just said is kind of the key to me. I spent some time with Keith a few weeks ago on this issue, and I also asked Randy some questions about some of the aspects of this several weeks ago too, and got a hold of the map and did some playing around with it. And the one thing I think our public should know is that this city commission and prior city commissions have been working this issue for years. We've made substantial progress. We have the Denning project all the way from Mead Garden to will be finished by the end of this year. Is that correct, Ray?
Yes.
We have the prospect of the St. Andrews Trail is getting more real now. Is that true?
That's correct.
Is it real yet?
We've got the money and the easement agreement. Okay. Right?
The only thing, and I asked the commission this because I've already asked Randy and I'm not sure where it goes, but the thing that's missing from the map are the pedestrian crossings of the various types, and certainly we've made dramatic steps in that regard over the past several years in putting in more crosswalks and more stanchioned crosswalks. I don't know, what do you call the things in the middle, the paddles?
As well as
signal crosswalks at major intersections have been added to too, and I was trying to get some history on that, one for my edification and to see where we need more of that, and two, to let everybody know how much progress is actually being made. So I'd like to ask the commission if their sense of it is that they'd like to see that data on crosswalks of the various types added to the GIS database.
Yes.
Butch, did you have a?
Yeah, I believe some of that's being added now, and Butch can elaborate on that.
Well, I think we're very good at where sidewalks are and where sidewalks aren't, but you're correct. The mid-block crossings that are throughout the city and becoming more prevalent are not mapped, and they should be, so that we have a better picture of where you can walk and not walk.
I think people are really surprised when you throw up one of those mid-road paddles. There's a number of people I don't think that even knew there were crosswalks there until one of those goes up. Right. So they're definitely helpful at slowing down traffic with those.
They are very popular, and sometimes they're too popular because people will call and want them very badly, but you have to pay attention to turning radius where you place these.
No, I understand. Randy, can we get something scheduled?
Yes, sir.
We need to probably see it in the next couple months before we get into budget season on this.
Okay.
Okay. Are you all good with that?
Yes.
Sure.
Great.
And the things that I sent you in the email,
yes.
we're pretty comfortable. We're looking at those two to see if they could or could not be incorporated.
I think the next time you look at it, most of them are going to be in there. I looked at it this afternoon, and Keith had already changed quite a bit of it, and some of it wasn't accessible, which meant he was in there working on it.
So. Well, the good news is I have not looked at it before, so there were just blatant questions that I saw.
Oh, sure, that's sure.
So.
It's Would you like to make that email public so the rest of us can have the benefit of it?
Yeah, it was. It's nothing really exciting, but I just said that the connections to the external trails.
We can send that with the
link responses.
Yeah, with the link to the map.
Sure.
That'd be good. Okay.
Excellent. Mr. Mayor, can I ask my questions?
Oh, I thought you were.
No, I got kind of cut off there.
I gave it to you first. I apologize.
No, I thought it was a real good presentation. You guys put together a lot of good information. And one of the things I wanted to suggest that you can print these GIS data to PDF files, and in the PDF file you can actually click the layers off and on. And it's a little easier for people like me, including myself. I like to get the PDF files and go in and click the layers off and on.
I didn't know you could do that on PDF. You can click the layers.
If you print it from the GIS properly to the PDF, it will all come in on layers just like the GIS. And I know this, you know, based on our past computer experience here at the PDF might be a little easier for us to work with.
Yeah, if you would like that, just send us an email, and Keith, I'm sure can.
Yeah, I think. I'm sure Keith knows how to do it. Yep. Yep. And then the other item I wanted to mention is this kind of, there's still, you know, this is the trail connectivity, if you will, and then I want to, you know, not lose the fact at some point when we look at green space connectivity, which kind of ties to that. And then the third item, I just wanted to point something out real quick. If you could go back to the one slide that showed the needed connection area. I think you had the purple ovals, if you will.
Yeah.
Is that one of them that really stuck out to me was that one that goes along Temple to Howell Branch, where we just purchased all that natural area.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be nice if you could naturally get to the natural area via your bicycle or walk. So.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Tim, for not knowing much about it, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Nice job. Sometimes it's better than you know.
Okay. We're going to take citizen comments closer to 5 o'clock. We have the agenda, consent agenda. Let's say you, Commission.
Move to approve.
Okay. I second.
Is the consent agenda including the minutes?
It does.
Okay. I have an issue with the minutes.
Okay.
And my only issue, Carolyn, is that I'm not sure why we would add something after the fact. I know that there was something that came to us in an email, and I get a little bit alarmed when things get changed after the fact like that. So my reading of that seemed to imply it was something that we wanted to add in, and I just didn't see a need to do that.
It actually was something that was said during the meeting about three times, and I thought it was important that residents understand that the vacation home issue is not about your neighbor next door running out of room. It's about major real estate conglomerates out of state buying up large parcels of residential real estate in parts of Florida. It's not a problem yet for Winter Park, and hopefully it will not be. But in other parts of Florida, it is a problem. And that I wanted to make two points. I wanted to, number one, make sure people understood that it was the real estate conglomerates from out of state, not necessarily the mom and pop homesteaded property next door to you. And the second was that as the representative, I wanted them to know that I had taken time to go there and actually lobby on their behalf. So I thought that was a way to do both of those things at once, but that was really my objective, that's all. And it wasn't anything new, it was things that were said during the meeting numerous times, just didn't get in the minutes.
So two things, I don't think it's not in the minutes as I have them on my computer, Cindy.
Right.
So it's not in the motion that was made, those additions. The only issue I think, and we keep going back to this, is how close we get to verbatim minutes.
Right.
And I understand your point, and I appreciate that because you made the point a few times during the commission. Meeting last time.
And made the effort to drive
to go to Tallahassee. And we thanked you multiple times.
And I just wanted to make sure that my constituents, when they look back on things, realize that I'm making that effort on your behalf. So that was the only reason I recommended it. If it doesn't have the approval of my peers, I will.
Well, if we hadn't sent out emails, you and me together, to thousands of our residents, if we hadn't.
We've done a good job, by the way.
If we haven't sent letters to the or Orlando Sentinel and the Winter Park Maitland Observer, I think many of our residents from the comments I've gotten are fully aware of our joint contribution on this issue.
We have worked very hard and very successful. Right. So.
Well, not necessarily final.
It's not over yet.
Okay, so it's not in the motion. It's not in the minutes. We will open the floor to public comment. We have a motion and a second on the consent agenda. Anybody wish to comment on that? Nope, we'll close the floor to public comment. You all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. Okay, we have item 10. Who is leading this?
Mr. Mayor, this is an appeal of a staff decision to deny a special event which would require the closure of Park Avenue.
I believe this came up last meeting.
That's correct.
And you met with the,
and the applicant is here, the appellant is here, and would like to present their case to the commission. Staff is available to answer any questions the city has about staff's position on the matter.
I have a quick question. You did have a follow-up with the applicant. I think that's where we ended up to ask staff to go back and bring it back as a former as a formal item, right? So did you have any further discussion? Or?
No, we did not have
further. Okay, great. So I will certainly open up the floor to the applicant. There you are. Please.
May I say a few things first,
certainly.
If you don't mind?
If you mind introducing yourself, we reckon that'd be great.
Yes. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Liz Shepherd, and I have been a merchant on Park Avenue now for 35 years. I own Bay Bay's, which is the children's store, and I also own Liz's Fashion Experience, which is the ladies' store. I'm one of those small entrepreneurs that has basically helped build Winter Park and really our country as well. I step out of the box every now and again, and I'm so glad that you take a few moments to hear me. But I've really watched the changes on Park Avenue. I've been here when we did the cityscape, and there was a piece of plywood that went across the street from one side to the other for several months and did business during that length of time. I'm a very active person in the community. There isn't a church, a school, or a charity in this town that I don't support. And I feel right now we really need to be a lot more creative on Park Avenue in order to support the merchants that are there and keep them there. I stepped out of the box, as I said, with the Fall Fashion Week run my show. We employed our wonderful own Winter Park police and fire department that worked with us twice, and to the best of my knowledge, had no problems whatsoever with us. We did exactly what we were told to do, including I was sweeping the street at the end of the, fashion show. But right now I'm working with Femme Decor, which is the Heart Association. We're looking to do an event for first responders, and we are looking to do a Sunday brunch, which we will be doing inside of 310 Park Avenue. The brunch will actually be in there, but we would like to have a runway show prior to the brunch, which will possibly last about an hour, and close just the small south end of the avenue as we've done in the past to accommodate. This is going to be by invitation only, and I would say more than half of the money is going to first responders, because Femme Decor is putting out quite a bit of money to do it, as well as I'm donating the time, the models, the runway, the red carpet. Just so happens I do own all of that. So in the past, we've had no problems with the other merchants as well. Now, I've heard that we had someone mentioned last time I was here about the north end of the avenue complaining. The only thing I can say about that is 2 years ago, when I was grandfathered in with the fall show, I went to the meeting, the merchants' meeting, and I appealed to the north end of the avenue at that time. And I said, if anyone would like to participate, I said, because I do plan on pursuing this next year because it was so successful. I said, please contact me or get in touch with me. I'm more than open for to include the other end of the avenue. Not one person, not one, called or contacted me. But then again, I heard about the complaints that we took business from them. But on the same token, the bandstands on the north end of the avenue, where everything happens 99% of the time, we do not complain on the south end of the avenue. That's just the way it is. And then the other thing is, too, we tried in the past, I mean, I know how many things that we've tried to do on the avenue with reference to Arts Festival. Arts Festival stays in the park, down on the north end of the avenue, as much as we would have loved for some of it to come down to our end. And it was turned down on more than one occasion. I mean, we would love that. It would help us as well, you know. But right now, all I'm trying to do is to come up with something that's creative to bring back that old customer we used to have on the avenue, the right kind of customer that shopped in my store for numerous years. And they seem to respond very well to an invitation-only fashion show. I've tried numerous things in my store, which everyone else tries as well, you know, informal modeling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It does not work. It does not work. I've tried it all, trust me, including bringing a live lion down to the store one time. And the police department came down and said, did you get permission for this? But anyways, no, I'm just trying to bring more traffic back to the avenue. And I'm willing to, everybody can participate, I don't care, I mean, by all means. But so far, I just have never had anyone say, oh, I'm in. So I just would love to do it again and do it for spring, because our spring is about to spring. And for a wonderful cause, no better charity right now than for our first responders. And of course, I'm going to ask our own wonderful fire department and police to see if they might cooperate and help us out. But that's basically it.
Okay. Randy, can you kind of just bring us up to speed on staff's position and why the recommendation for denial?
Yes, sir. We have, over the years, learned from, and Michelle's been more directly involved, I'll let her answer what I don't cover, but we've learned over the years that the merchants prefer a limited number of street closures, even though some do benefit from street closures and bringing, you know, as you said, different types of shoppers to the avenue. It tends to hurt other businesses, you know, that have the more casual walk by type shopper or destination shopper and this is not their crowd. And so we've kind of put a limit on the approvals we do for new closures of Park Avenue. And so,
do we do anything else for invitation only? This sounds like an invitation only event. I think the ones I'm thinking of are kind of open to the public.
Right. Most of them are open to the public. I mean, you have some that are somewhat ticketed events like the Sip and Stroll,
right.
but that doesn't close the avenue to others. Others are still allowed through there. She's not trying to close that section of the avenue to anybody else. I mean, it's, but her event is invitation only.
Ms. Shepherd also referenced grandfathering, and I wasn't aware.
That was the fall, that was the
yes, sir.
The fall fashion show that she does. Mm-hmm.
So that was a legitimate action taken by the Parks Board to grandfather the...
Right.
So
yes, ma'am. That's wonderful. Thank you.
It's also part of a bigger fashion weekend that is more collaborative, you know, with the whole avenue and fashion week, you know, that there's
is
a big...
Is it open? Is it a more open event?
I think so. I think many of the stores have open events, and then there's some ticketed events, and you know, they've been changing it up. They used to have it in the tent. I think now they have it at the Alphandin, so... Some different things have been changing, but you know, trunk shows, all kinds of stuff. It's more like a week long.
Yes, it is a week long.
Questions?
So here's my issue. Do you have to be closed from 10 to 5? if it's a brunch?
No.
So that was when I looked at the application, it said from 10 to 5, and I'm on the avenue on Sunday mornings, and there's nobody down there usually till after church lets out. So that was my deal was, is there a way we make everybody happy? Because that's always been what I tried to do. And have it closed from 10 to 11 or whatever the time the sidewalk show was, because it's going to be inside. It wasn't going to be outside anyway. So I think it was the 10 to 5 time frame that I saw on the application that gave me pause.
The situation is we want to wait for people to get out of church.
Right.
Because the majority of the customers we do invite go to church. And we thought what we would do is do the runway show first. But and then the brunch thereafter, so that we could get off the street rapidly. But most churches, you don't get out of church until 12:30. So.
Well, I do.
No.
What's the minimum time period that you're looking at? That would be.
Well, what I'm thinking is if we can go on at 1, okay, on the and we need. See, the problem is we have a 60-foot runway. And we need the runway to be set up, and you need at least an hour and a half to 2 hours. I mean, and I have about 5 people working on it to set it up. And the lights and yeah. The sound. Okay. You see, this is where the time frame comes in.
Got it.
It's not the show at all. And because shows come and go quick, like in the blink of an eye, you're done. But, I mean, we certainly can get the runway and all of that down rapidly right after the show. And then that's when the people are going into the restaurant for the brunch at that time. But we do need a couple of hours, like I say, to set that up. Yeah, that's where our problem is.
Is there any consideration to doing it on New England? Park?
The problem there is customer doesn't want to come on a side street. They just do not want to come on a side street. They want to feel special. They're VIP, and a lot of the invitations that go out are VIP invitations. They don't want to sit on a side street. They want to be right there out front.
Okay, and then are you able to get any other vendors to join in the fashion show from the avenue?
Oh, of course, yes. Now, I'm not approaching the north end of the avenue. Tony's in, okay. I've already approached them. And, of course, you know, 310 Blue Partridge Tree, and she's trying to get the other restaurant open before then as well. C would like to be a part of it, the eyeglass place. I just spoke to the brand new store that just opened up with the custom purses. He would like to be a part of it as well. No, I mean, anybody on the south end of the avenue, we have definitely, you know, approached and then more than welcome to participate in the show, but you only have limited stores down there. We're becoming a restaurateur end of the avenue.
Why couldn't the businesses from the north end be part of the show but just not have the road closed up there?
You know, the thing is...
I'm just asking. I don't understand any sense.
They're more than welcome. Absolutely more than welcome. But I broached the subject before, and they were not interested. I mean, how many times am I supposed to go after the north end of the avenue and ask them to be a part of the show? You know, I mean, I'm happy to do that. Absolutely happy to do that. We had thought about asking John Craig to supply some men, but sometimes it's not easy as, you know, all of that. It's a very involved endeavor, first of all.
No, I understand. It just seems a lot more easy of a sell if you have the entire avenue involved instead of just a portion of the avenue.
And then they're going to complain that it's down in the south end of the avenue. It's not down in the north end of the avenue. I mean...
Well, could you switch it up each year? If you really want to have a fashion show on the avenue, right?
Well,
you're saying people aren't...
We have one in the fall.
So one in the spring.
Yeah. One of the big problems we have with it is that, thank God, Joanne has a big party room in the back of her restaurant at 310. There's a huge room back there. And we use it. We normally have at least 30 to 35 models, not including the children that I use in the show as well, which is another 15 or 20. And you have to have somewhere to change, you know, so you need to have the facility also attached that you can do that. Again, you have hair, you have makeup people. I mean, we go to all those lengths, but she has that big, huge party room back there, and she's always kind enough to donate it to us that we can do all the necessary things. Now, if we can find a venue down on the other end of the avenue that is, you know, willing to do something like that, absolutely. But that's not an easy thing to get someone to do, is to donate a big area like that.
Mr. Weldon, a few questions.
Yes, sir.
Liz, I greatly appreciate your initiative trying to, you know, work your business, you know, number one. That's what we like in Winter Park. Mm-hmm. But I do have some reservations about this, and I wanted to start with, you know, what is the Winter Park Merchants Association endorsement of this, or did I go to see them,
to be very honest with you. I did not go and say, you know, would you endorse this or not. It was pretty much a venture because of the charity involved. I just thought that I didn't need that sanction. I thought, you know, we're doing, see, the other show was for Fashion Week, so that was a whole different ballgame. This is a charity event. It is not a really a whole merchant association thing. This is a charity event for first responders.
Well, I appreciate your initiative, but I think you kind of put us in the middle here. And without a larger public interest from those doing business on Park Avenue, I have a hard time granting mm-hmm. an exception that will become a precedent. Everyone else down the road will use this as another argument that says, well, let's close Park Avenue for another 6 hours on another Sunday sometime. And mm-hmm. I don't think the commission, whether this commission or a subsequent...
Well, I have the signatures of all the south end of the avenue, so you would require the signatures of the north end of the avenue?
No, I think it's, you know, I think it's the Winter Park Merchants Association is, you know, speaks for the avenue, right? And I would like them to speak for the avenue in this case if they choose to do so. Mm-hmm. But in the absence of that, I feel like I'm in the middle of something that is going to set a precedent that's not going to be resolved ever. And I don't want to be setting precedents as a commissioner mm-hmm. for things that are going to cause problems down the road with other conflicts between merchants and restaurants. I just don't think it's wise mm-hmm. on my part.
Yeah. But up until this point, no one else has ever raised anything like this, correct?
No, we just had a lady that wanted to close Park Avenue for...
She is not a merchant on the avenue and not on the avenue for 35 years as I have been. I know exactly who you're speaking of.
Right.
Because she came to me.
Right.
And I said, they will not do it.
Right.
You are not a merchant. You're not with the Merchants Association. They will not grant it.
So, but okay. So, I mean, the Merchants Association to me kind of seems to be the key what Commissioner Weldon is talking about, and you know, it's
well, there are other venues that are set up for this around the city, whether it's the community center, the civic center, the hotels,
the bandstand,
I think that's
we've done that. We've done that. I mean, like I say, I've been around 35 years. There isn't a fashion show that I haven't done at the Alphon everywhere.
Okay.
I've done them all. This just sets a different theme, and people seem to be very enamored to it for some unknown reason. They love it. And they like to be on Park Avenue. They like to get that VIP invitation, which, you know, it was me that come up with all of that for the Fashion Week thing. And it just was so amazingly... accepted. I mean, it was mind-boggling to me because we brought 500 people down to Park Avenue for that show. I could not believe it.
Ms. Shepherd, thank you.
We'll
discuss this up here and
thank
and
you.
See what actions.
I appreciate your time
very
much.
Thank
you
very much. Okay, folks. Randy, anything else to add? Or Michelle, anything else you'd like to add?
Only happy to answer questions.
No. Any questions for staff? No. We have a motion.
We're
going to
entertain
a motion.
We don't have a motion.
We don't have any motion.
I'll do it.
You don't have to do anything if there's unless it's moving forward. We don't have to take.
It's an appeal. I think a motion to deny
the
appeal
or
a motion to approve the appeal.
Okay.
I think it's appropriate because of the nature for which it came.
Okay. Well, before I go there, I just want to clarify for Liz's benefit that everyone up here, speaking for them as well as. All the people on the avenue that I know want this to work for everybody. Want Park Avenue to work for everybody. However, in the absence of any broad-based support for this program, I'm going to move to deny it.
Okay. So, a second? Yeah. I'll second that, Commissioner.
I was going to say, I prefer we give her the opportunity to come back with some more broad-based support.
Sure, she always says that.
And well, so not deny it now, give her that opportunity and delay until the next commission.
Well, folks, we're still going to run into the issue with the, as Commissioner Weldon raised, with the precedent that we're setting here on this. And there is one, there's already one show that Ms. Shepherd has, so that's where the challenge comes in.
Yeah, no, I guess where I'm at is that the Merchants Association is going to fully endorse it. To me, that's where we're here to help the Winter Park Merchants Association. And so
we're
do
here to help everybody.
Yeah. Or a broad base of interest in the city.
Yes.
Thank you. If you'd like to make a motion to table, that will take precedent over the motion to deny. That is certainly
Yeah, I would move to table.
Okay. We see no second on that. Okay, we have a motion, we have a second. Dan, is it appropriate to open up the floor to public comment, even though it's not?
Yes. Was there a second on the motion?
There was a second. I seconded
that. Thank you.
Okay. So let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item? Now is your time. Nope. We'll close the floor to public comment. Okay. Cindy, would you please read the roll on the motion to deny?
Commissioner Seidel?
No.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, Ms. Shepherd, thank you for your commitment. Thank you for seeing this forward and bringing it forward to us. There are many things we'd like to. Thank you. Okay, we have, let's look at the public hearing, 11A. Who's bringing that forward?
You have a resolution to be read by the
city. Yeah, I'd like that. Dan, would you mind reading that, please, 11A?
Sure. Resolution number, resolution of the city commission of the city of Winter Park, Florida, adopting in non-avalorum special assessment to fund the installation of street brick and related activities upon a portion of Pansy Avenue, generally described as beginning at Pennsylvania Avenue and extending westerly about 670 feet, establishing the lien associated therewith, adopting an assessment roll, directing that the assessment roll be certified to the Orange County Tax Collector, providing for collection and enforcement of special assessment, providing for other matters related to the special assessment, providing for severability, and providing an effective date.
Thank you. Troy.
So the residents of the east end of Pansy Avenue approached the city and requested us to consider bricking Pansy Avenue. So the western part of Pansy Avenue is already brick.
Can you give us the borders, please, when you say east and west Pansy?
Well, it's this eastern 670 feet.
So that's from Pennsylvania?
West. Yes, Pennsylvania West, 670 feet. It doesn't stop at a particular intersection, but it basically goes from asphalt to brick in the middle of a block.
Okay.
And so
What's the threshold, to remind the audience, please?
We have been using two-thirds of a majority.
Okay.
And in this particular case, we have over two-thirds of a majority that voted in favor of it.
Okay. How many homes are affected specifically?
There are.
See the list here.
Yeah, on the order of
18.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do you want me to go into why we?
No. Let's just ask to see if there's any questions from commission before you do that. Anybody? I think we all understand the program.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure, Commissioner Cooper.
The first question is about the existing brick. I got a call from a couple of residents that said it was in horrible condition. So when you brick, do you then include the entire street?
Is that yes. It? And I talked with a couple of the residents, and we will go in and do some leveling of the existing portion. I don't know if we'll do a complete remove and relay, but yes,
but
we will.
But you're going to straighten that out.
Correct.
And the second question I had was, when I reviewed the policy, the language of the policy was a bit different than the way we have interpreted over the years. And I want to talk about that during the commission time later, not okay. Now, because it has nothing to do with this. But I do want to ask you the question. When you calculated the two-thirds majority, I understand from your email that you calculated not only the vote per property owner, but you also calculated the vote per linear footage. That, and we let the new, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a weighted approval.
So it's a weighted approval. Both ways is good. Okay. And we asked the new person. Those were the complaints, of course, that you mentioned to us. Very good. Thank you.
Anyone else? No? Okay.
I'll move it.
Okay. I'll second. Great. Let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item? Now is your time. This is 11A, folks. Please. Yes, sir. And folks, if you wouldn't mind, if you're going to come to the microphone, if you wouldn't mind filling out one of those yellow sheets, and you can certainly do it afterwards. Got it? If you wouldn't mind handing it out to the city clerk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, yes. My name is Derek Schlosser. I reside at 1201 North Pennsylvania Avenue, which is a corner house on the corner of Pennsylvania and Pansy. And I'm speaking on behalf of my family and neighbors that are opposed to the Pansy Avenue Bricking Project. We're opposed to the bricking project for the following reasons. The assessment to my family for this project is a significant sum, exceeds our budget housing expense. My property happens to be one of the widest on the lots, one of the widest lots on the street, which results in assessment for this project equal to around $9,000. My neighbor across the street has a wider lot. He's assessed at $11,500, and between the two of us, we're paying like 10% of the project, which seems ridiculous. I mean, I feel like everybody should be assessed equal amounts on the project, not based on linear footage. So a street that everybody's going to use, why should we be assessed, you know, higher value just because we have a little bit higher linear footage based on, you know, you've got people down the street paying $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, and I'm paying $9,000. Doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I have both of us have young kids that we're trying to save for education. And you know, that's a pretty big chunk of change that we could use towards our education instead of paying for a street that's really not going to benefit neither of us. We're both very happy with the paving projects that were done on Pennsylvania, New York, with just the regular paving and asphalt. And the bricking, to be honest with you, I mean, I like to cycle. It's very uncomfortable to cycle on a brick street. It's very hard on your suspension. My neighbor across the street has a Tesla sports car that he will not drive on a street like that. I mean, you know, so that makes it very uncomfortable for him to have that right in front of his house. I mean, I've been assured that the bricks will be leveled and everything else, but looking at what's happened down the street on Pansy Avenue, I mean, it's one of the most unleveled streets in the city of Winter Park. I mean, I don't know if you've driven down there on that end of the west end of Pansy. It's ridiculous. And I mean, I'm happy that you've taken the time to listen to what I'm having to say, but I don't know if there's anything that can be done about, you know, the voting here, or if it could be relooked at as far as maybe, you know, if you're going to go through with the project, I just feel like it should be an equal assessment, not based on, you know, linear footage.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Schlossman.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll close the floor to public comment. Randy, remind me, or Troy, whoever, the payment, the payback is handled how?
They have the option of paying up front, or we will finance it over 10 years.
At 3.5%.
Over 10 years at 3.5%.
Yeah.
And you do sit as the equalization board, so if you see an injustice in the way the allocation is made, you have the right to deny the entire project. You also have the right to adjust the way it's done. If it were your suggestion, if it were your preference to do it on a, you know, divide it by 18 basis, then I would suggest we go back and re-vote, you know, so that everybody knows they're voting
on
what that amount is, because it would be up for some and down for others. And it may change the results, but that is certainly within your purview as the equalization board.
Yeah. Well, it's a significant chunk to Mr. Schlosser. I mean, I definitely feel for him there.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir. I went and asked Randy for a copy of the actual ballot that was sent to the residents so I can understand exactly what was represented to them.
Sure.
And what was represented to them was that it was going to be done on a square footage basis.
On square footage or linear footage?
Linear footage. I'm sorry, excuse me. And it passed on that basis, so it's rather difficult unless we want to deny it and encourage a revote on a different basis to, you know, not to move forward, given that the vote was on the basis of how it's been presented to us here. Now, with that said, I do have some considerable empathy for Mr. Schlosser, isn't it?
Yes.
For his point of view, I was, and this methodology is not laid out in our code one way or the other.
Right.
And according to staff, yes, sometimes it's done well.
I have it here. I brought you a copy of it. I thought we
That's okay. Just go on about your point, Mr.
Finish it.
Well, the point is, I think Randy's correct. Either we deny it and we ask for a revote on a different basis, and that basis may be by lot or by property owner, but it also may be because these things vary from circumstance to circumstance, street to street. You could take half the cost by property owner and then half the cost by linear footage, and you get a blended rate, so to speak, as another approach towards trying to make this more fair. But in either event, we would have to we wouldn't have to do anything. You know, we would deny it, and the neighborhood could choose to come back for another vote.
Sure. And Mr. Cook,
did you want to
come? I will go after you. He's called.
My thought on this was I did also go and look at the allowances under statute. Chapter 170 as to what we can do relative to how we collect this. And I also went back and looked at our city policy. And because of what I read in the policy, I felt as though it was a reasonable question, a policy question to discuss. But from my perspective, it cannot be just for this street. The policy would have to be that we either do one vote per house, one equal share per resident, or one weighted vote per house and one weighted share per resident. And for me, I can see the pros and cons of both of those approaches. But if I look at a street light, the question is, does a brick street serve the entire street equally? Perhaps it does. Or is it like our taxes, where it truly should be assessed on the value of your property? So I could argue both sides of that, but if we're even going to consider changing the way this is done, I think we would need to table this, deal with the policy decision first, or either deny this, deal with the policy.
Yeah, we can't really table it.
Are they required to wait a period of time if we were to not deny it and just go work the policy? It may be the same when we're done with the conversation. Understand that, Mr. Schlosser. It may be the same, even if we all agreed to defer the decision on this one and have that conversation. It may end up the same conclusion.
Well, let me explain something, too. We can certainly table this. We can table this and have alternatives for the financing and for the number of per property, and it's not per residence, per property too. We need to be clear on that.
I'm not
come
sure.
Back to us a couple of different options. I think
I am open to that if it's possible, but the residents were presented with a ballot that said it was going to be a certain way, and the vote is based on that. So I'd like the council's.
We have a policy that says it's different.
But all we're doing is approving it. We can table the approval until alternate policies or options are brought forward, and then if we do end up liking another approach, we can deny and go back for a vote.
Well, I'm having trouble with this, guys, because right now we have a rule in place. That rule is what these people acted on good faith with and what they voted with, and those were the rules that were there, and I'm having a lot of trouble with us deciding, and I also feel for the gentleman who came in front of us, but for one person, I mean, I know there are a few other no votes. I just can't. We've always said that's the vote won, and
so I can't deny it.
I can't deny it, and I can't table it because what is tabling going to do but ask us to go back and change the rules. So if in fact we need to change the rules to go forward, I may be okay with that, but I'm not one of those retroactive people. And I don't think we penalize the people that are counting on their brick streaks because we're thinking it might need to change.
I passed you a copy of the policy.
I don't think that's clear.
For later.
You don't think what I said was clear?
No, no, no. What she said was clear, and the policy is clear. Both things are clear.
Mr. Seidel, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mayor. Troy, my question goes into the origin of the request. There are a few things I saw in the email, so I just kind of wanted to clarify. But was the origin of the request through an actual resident, or was it through a property owner that intends to develop the property?
I'm not exactly. It was through a owner of property.
Property owner.
That lived at that property.
That was actually a developer.
Was it a resident that lived at the property that initiated the request?
I'm not exactly sure. I wasn't.
And then, how many of the people that voted actually live at the property? I think those are simple questions to answer, and that was brought up in one of the emails. And I think to me that sways.
Now you're getting in the weeds.
Well,
it's not relevant. The property owner is how the code reads.
Because the property owner is being
assessed. I understand that.
Assessed.
It's relevant to me.
That's fair.
If I felt people bought properties in my neighborhood and now I got
to
spend
the chunk
of money,
the value
I'm going to have a lot more leniency on the person that's been living there than the person that's bought the property to develop it.
Anything else? Ms. Cooper.
I think the question is very basic, and it's the question that I asked you the first time, Troy. This is very important. I can read the policy, I can read the staff report, I can see that there are two different approaches to this. My question to you is, when you consider the new owner that's in the neighborhood and you calculate the vote, does the vote exceed two-thirds when you calculate it both by one vote per property and one vote per weighted on the linear footage?
Yes.
And in that case, it doesn't do any good to delay anything. The
right.
vote has been taken,
okay.
And the vote
so
has
then we'll entertain
succeeded.
A motion. I'll move to approve
it.
I'll second it. You did.
I
appreciate
it.
That. Thank you. You did. My apologies.
Okay. Troy, I have the gentleman who spoke, his house is at the end of the street, correct?
Right on the corner of Penn and Fanny.
Okay. And then he indicated that his neighbor was not in favor of the project either?
Across the street.
Yes.
Can we exempt those two since they're across from each other? Which I know that's on Lakeview at the beginning of Lakeview when you go by Rollins. There's several houses there that don't have brick. And the rest of Lakeview is all brick. So if they're not in favor of it, can we exempt those two out of it? Or is there something in the rules that says it must abide?
You can do whatever you wish to do. We can certainly make a motion for it. That power lies with this commission.
So you could make
but
that.
You were setting
well, I would like to hear from the property owner if they're acceptable to that.
That was one of the options. We were told that while the proposal was written in a certain way, so the only way we can vote is with the way the proposal was written. I said, well, there's two of us side across the street from each other. Why can't we bring it right after our property and we're not included in it?
Okay. So, Ed, I'm sorry. I just don't want to have a conversation with the
Thank you.
Audience. We can certainly have them back up. We have a motion. We have a second. Let's open up the floor to public comment, and then we'll keep the floor open to public comment, which it is, and then Troy may have you back with further discussion. Sir?
Yes, sir.
The floor, the mic is open for you, sir.
I did not fill out a sheet.
That's okay. We can get
we'll
one from you.
My name is Bud Kirk. I have one of the big lots on Pansy. And Pansy is not only scheduled for paving, but Mr. Attaway has determined that it's probably a really good time to put in underground utilities. I mean, the street's going to be torn up. Why not go ahead and put in underground utilities? So that's a real plus because it moves it up several years for Pansy because we don't have a lot of oak trees. And it's not one of the high areas that are in danger of losing electricity, but it is one that would lose electricity. So I think that's a real plus for us. The other issue is everybody voted. I mean, I went to a lot of trouble. I called Dr. Schlosser's office. I left a message. I wrote out something. I mean, he had a chance to vote, and did it, so did his neighbor across the street. But the rules were majority votes. And it doesn't matter how you're going to do it. Those two people voted against it. But everybody else that voted for it should prevail. I mean, it's numbers. And those are the rules we went in with. And this should have been brought up, you know, before the ballot went out. It wasn't. And gosh, alive. I mean, I think people on the street are ready and willing to go with it. It's been a lot of months. And as far as whether owners, there were two property owners who were in the process of constructing homes. They didn't live there, but they sure voted because they wanted the street. And by far the majority of people were residents of the street. And I really would encourage y'all to kind of give us a break, since we have spent, that's my time.
Oh, you have another minute, sir, if you need.
Great. Give us a break, because we spent a lot of time, we've waited a long time for this, and for this to pop up just a few weeks before the public hearing is really inconvenient to us. And a lot of work has gone in by a lot of people in the community, and we would really encourage you to vote yes and vote to pave it the whole way. It would be ridiculous not to pave it the whole way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure, thank you. Appreciate
very much for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay, we're going to close the floor to public comment. Thank you all. And I will say that is what this commission is here for, too, to hear public comment, whether you're for or against it. Mr. Schlosser, sir, has the opportunity to come and present his case, as does Mr. Kirk. So thank you both for being here and discussing the issue. Folks, we have a motion. We have a second. We've had discussion. We've taken public comment. Unless there's further discussion, let's move this to a vote. Okay. Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Lear?
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Schlosser, thank you for coming here today. Unfortunately, we have a procedure and process in place, and your neighbors, the vote was cast. So, but thank you for being here today. Troy, I'm going to just pause you for 1 second. We have 5:15. We're going to open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on an item that's not on this agenda, please, now is your time. Ms. Hall.
Hi, Beth Hall, 516 Sylvan Drive, and I'd like to ask you all to consider whether the public notice provisions of our zoning code for written notice signs are currently implemented or getting the job done. Coming to you on March 26th is a request for approvals to build 18 townhomes on Aloma west of the site of the yet-to-be-built Fifth Third Bank. Despite the fact that four R1A lots and one O2 lot, five lots are the subject of the request, a single unobtrusive sign rests on just one of the lots, hard to see as you drive by Aloma. The Leary for Mayor sign at the site is more prominent. Our zoning code 5889C2 calls for written notice to be posted on the property that is the subject of the hearing. The code is silent as to multiple properties. 2 months ago, I emailed planning, copying you, to ask why only a single sign when five lots were in play and the requests for all five lots are not identical. Wouldn't five signs be far more likely to alert the public? Mr. Briggs, as always, replied promptly, thank you, Jeff, that since 1971, staff has maintained the custom of one poster per frontage, and all the city attorneys since then had deemed this sufficiently in compliance with the code requirements. Well and good that the city attorneys are satisfied, but here's the question. Would residents be more likely to notice a single sign or five signs, one on each parcel as they move past? Common sense tells you the answer. If you're already thinking, heck no, we can't have five signs there, our phones would ring off the hook and our emails would blow up, So with the developers, then you really do have the answer as to which method would best effectuate the public notice provision. Yes, notice was mailed to those of us within 1,500 feet and published in the paper, will be again, but I'm referring to the code requirements for the developer to place a written notice upon the land of less than 1 acre. All five parcels are less than one. This project will impact everyone who lives in Winter Park since it sits near one of our busiest intersections. Residents need to know, no, they deserve to know what changes this developer is seeking. Have the city's actions since 71 honored the spirit of the law or just the letter of the law on public notice by signage? Keep in mind that tabling often results in notice mailed to ever fewer property owners. Please do it right. Let's don't pretend to give notice. Let's really give it. That lonely sign out there won't alert most people that five parcels are in play in a big way. I've spoken to others about this project, including former commissioners, former mayors, and city board members. None was aware of it. This speaks volumes. Five signs at this site would be noticed, resembling, as they would, a small cemetery. I urge you to consider implementing sign regulations which truly achieve public notice to all who could be impacted by projects when citywide notice is not required. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hall.
Good afternoon. My name is Deirdre McNabb. I'm at 1860 Summerlin Avenue. I'm with the League of Women Voters of Orange County, which, as you probably know, is the largest league in the United States of America. By the way, I want to thank you for giving the time, the public time to speak, and to all those citizens in the audience who come here because they're interested and want to stay engaged in their local government. I'm here today to talk to you about solar energy, which is an issue that I and many of my cohorts have been very involved with across the state of Florida. In the last 2 years, we have launched 28 cooperatives around the state of Florida, adding almost 7 megawatts to our solar energy capability in Florida. We are now number one in residential solar permits. Why are we doing this? Because of savings. This saves a lot of money for our citizens, and numerous studies have shown even if you can't put solar on your roof, when your neighbors put solar on their roof, it helps everyone because it reduces the stress on the grid. But let's talk about savings. I have solar on my house in Winter Park. Mary DuBois back there in the middle has solar on her house in Winter Park. This gentleman, fantastic. And we calculate between the two of us, we've saved about $7,000 in the last 2 years. That's money that gets kept in the community. So what we're about as volunteers is helping spread the word around the state. Orange County, under Teresa Jacobs' leadership, has just launched their fourth co-op. And we're here today to tell you and all the neighbors in Winter Park that it is open and available to them Wednesday night at Rollins College. At 6 p.m. at Bush Auditorium, there will be a public information session for everyone and anyone to come and learn about how they might be able to save thousands of dollars on their utility cost. So that was the number one issue, is that solar is available to our citizens right now. The co-op is only open for about 3 months. I talked to the installer today who did my house and Mary's house. He said he can't keep sustaining the low cost that they offer through the co-op. So I really urge anybody who's interested to sign up, and there's no obligation to go solar. The second issue we wanted to raise today was a number of cities across Florida, 50 to be exact, have made the goal to go ready for 100, which is to make a commitment to get their energy from clean, renewable energy. And we would like to come and speak with each of you individually and answer your questions and hear your questions. And we're going to start with you, Mayor Leary, if you don't mind. You'll be interested to know that the U.S. Council of Mayors voted unanimously to support this. So we look forward to raising this issue with each of you and hoping that the City of Winter Park can join Dunedin, St. Pete, Miami-Dade, and Orlando. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. McNabb. Clarissa, is there anything, can we help promote that on the city website to get people to Rollins? Great, thank you.
And can I pass these out?
Certainly love to meet with you, but only if Sue wears sunglasses to our meeting.
Are you walking on sunshine tonight, Deidre?
We got it, then. We're set. Thank you.
That's God made energy.
Anybody else? Okay, we'll close the floor to public comment.
Do the folks here know we have solar panels on the building?
That we have.
We should brag about it.
Yeah. We have a small solar.
Small solar. We started it in the city.
Also, our part of power contracting includes some solar.
That's right.
Okay, let's move to item 11B. Mr. City Attorney.
Resolution of the Town Council of the Town of Eatonville, Florida, the City Council of the City of Maitland, Florida, and the City Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida, supporting the expansion of the Orange County-owned Wymore Road and provide for an effective date.
Great. Mr. City Manager?
Yeah, this is the item that Mayor McDonald spoke about earlier. This request came from the Town of Eatonville and the City of Maitland, who have both adopted this resolution already. And a request that the City of Winter Park join them. A small portion of this stretch of road is in the City of Winter Park, just north of Lee Road. That first part of Wymore is in the City of Winter Park. That's why they ask us to join them in this resolution, requesting the county to widen Wymore. So it is kind of an unusual request for it to be a joint resolution like this. So the real question is if you feel you need to modify it in any way. They've already adopted it in this format, so I'm not sure how that proceeds. So, but
well, I think any resolution in support of it would be accepted if we have minor modifications to meet our needs. But I'm supportive of this, Mayor McDonald. I appreciate you and Mayor Cole bringing this to our attention. So, thank you, Commissioner. Questions?
I'll move it.
Okay. Second.
Yeah, I'd like to propose a minor modification just because I'm in the business. That I would definitely support a study to determine where widening of the road would be beneficial. I know he said everybody knows it needs to be widened, then it should be a short study.
Well, we have staff's
do we have a question?
Staff anecdotally.
Traffic study.
That's correct. I mean, staff just looked at it and said they didn't see where it would negatively impact us in any way. In fact, I felt it might help with that minor amount of cut through that comes down Bennett, Monroe, back through that way.
Especially given what's going on up in that.
Where the development's going to take place on the Hungerford property is the concern. That's going to happen with or without this widening.
Right. So.
Yeah, and I would feel that, you know, if we could even say if the study does prove it needs to be widened, that it be done as expeditiously as possible. I mean, that's the... I guess it's kind of just saying a road needs to be widened is not something that I take lightly, that's all.
Sure. I'm comfortable with staff's recommendation. I think both cities, all three, city, Maitland, and the town of Eatonville have run this through their departments as well and saw no issue with it. So, Commissioner, normally on a major piece and even something minor, I would support your...
No, I understand.
But since this is just such a small thing, I think I don't see the need for it. But that's where.
Well, like, I don't tell you how many lanes. You know, there's some details in there that.
Sure.
Do you make a three-lane road like Lake
Lawn? It says four-lane configuration.
A four-lane configuration, bike lanes, other things.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do you want to make an amendment?
Did he get a second?
He did not make an official motion.
Oh, he did. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, hearing where the commission's at, I mean, I look at it differently, that's all.
Well,
and but, that's okay.
But you might be surprised. Just
Greg, I appreciate your interest in this stuff. I really do. But the reality is that what we're doing here is endorsing something or not.
Right.
We're endorsing something to Orange County, who's going to determine what the roads are going to be, and the town of Eatonville, which has most of the road, right?
Yes, sir.
Is going to be very interested in bike lanes and sidewalks too, and we can't force them to do anything. But if you want to lobby them for that when they go through their planning process, you're entitled to do that.
Mm-hmm. We'll certainly have a seat at the table during the planning process.
And if at that time the Winter Park City Commission wants to have a resolution to the town of Eatonville and Maitland to add bike paths or whatever, we are welcome to do that. So I think we're a little early in the process to get down to those details. That's my sense.
Well, that's when they say a four-lane configuration.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm saying is I'm uncomfortable saying this, we should widen it to this without a study and analysis.
I appreciate that, but we're not, you know, we're not
like I couldn't sign a report without doing an analysis that says, I've looked at this road and here's my recommendation to Orange County.
Well, this is far from approvals. This is really just a resolution to ask them to take a peek at it.
Well, that's how we're interpreting it. I'm good with that.
Okay. Any other questions?
That's what it is.
Okay, let's open up the floor to public comment. Mayor, you have the floor if you'd like it again, just because can't get enough of you. Okay. Anybody else wishing to speak on this item? No? We'll close the floor to public comment. Okay. Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Wobbins?
Yes.
Mayor Larry?
Yes. Dale, thank you for leading this. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Briggs?
I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Next item on our agenda, once PowerPoint comes up, is a subdivision or lot split request for the property at 717 North Capon Avenue. The property owner is asking to divide this 100-foot wide property into two 50-foot lots. You see the location there, just a few lots south of Webster. And they want to, as I said, cut it in half, two 50-foot lots, 100-foot deep. That's 5,000 square feet of lot area for each of the properties. It's zoned R1A. As you know, R1A requires for new lots that they be 75 feet wide, and this request is for 50, so they need a variance from the commission. And R1A requires 8,500 square feet of lot area. These are 5,000 square feet, so again, that's a variance needed for this lot split from the City Commission. And as you know, every time we do these, what we do is we look around in the surrounding area and say, well, how does this request compare to the neighborhood that's around it? And as you look across the street, you will see that those older plats were plats of 60-foot lots. So when you do the math, with all of those 60s thrown in there, the comparison does not come out well for the applicant, because 83% of the lots in this 500 radius area are 60 or greater, and 17% are in the 50 to 60 range, so the vast majority are 60 or greater. It did not bode well in the comp plan test. As a result, there was a recommendation for denial by the staff. However, when we went to the Planning and Zoning Commission, the P&Z board looked at the alternatives for this property and realized that if it's not split, there's a large property and they're going to maximize the return on their investment, and they're going to build a home twice as big as any of the other new homes in the neighborhood. So the Planning and Zoning Board felt that two homes, each on a 50-foot lot, would produce, while it's two homes, they would produce smaller ones than if it were kept together as one 100-foot wide lot. And so the recommendation that comes to you from the Planning and Zoning Board is for approval, inclusive of the variances that I mentioned. So with that, I'll answer any questions.
Commissioner Cooper.
Jeff, if you maximize the floor area ratio after you split them into 50-foot lots, what's the size of the home, the maximum home size that could be built on those lots?
Well, in the combined 10,000 square foot lot, George, is that in that 4,200 range for 10,000 square foot in our glitch area?
That's 50 by what?
100. So you can build a 4,300 square foot house if it's a 50-foot lot or if it's a 100-foot lot?
If it's a 100.
If it's a 100. Okay, and if it's 50 foot, 25?
Yeah,
okay.
Okay.
Any other questions? Commissioner
Seidel. Jeff, what's the side yard setback? Is it 7 feet if the lots have 50 feet?
50 feet, it's 7.5 feet to the first floor, wedding cake,
right.
10 feet to the second floor. And so if it's kept at 100 feet, it would be a couple feet further away, but not significantly.
Okay.
And the land behind that, is that under common ownership?
Yeah, the land behind it, although it's broken into different ownership parcels, is all land that is the Patmos Chapel of Seventh-day Adventist properties.
Yeah, I just add my own little opinion here. I mean, one of the things that I feel is that for affordable housing, smaller lots will lead to less expensive houses when they're not 4,000 square feet. So I'm okay with approving this kind of lot split.
Especially, I agree. Especially as the lots on either side are also 50 feet.
So is the applicant here? Would the applicant like to present? Mr. Hamner?
Hi, Frank Hamner, 1011 North Wymore Road, Winter Park. I want you guys to see my new shoes.
You see the equipment? I can't sleep, right?
I got new shoes.
Wow.
The reason I got new shoes is because I walked this neighborhood getting approvals from the neighbors.
Thanks, Frank.
About who agreed and who disagreed with this proposal. Can I get the Elmo? So, as you can see here, it's hard to
blow
see.
It up, Frank, just a little bit. Can anybody make that larger for those of us that are
Frank's
challenge?
We have confidence in him.
There we go.
Oh, he's good. Right. He's good. Thank you, Frank.
Look at that. So, this is the subject lot right here. It's 100 feet. Jeff's absolutely correct. Your plan, you've got to have some standard. The standard is 500-foot radius. When you do that, you find that these lots here are platted 60. Every lot where I have a highlight or an X is a person who either out and out approved of the lot split, or we sent both regular and certified mail. We got the green card back that they received it, asked them if they had any objection, and they classed no objection. The only two exceptions to that were Ms. Perkins, who indicated if she had an objection, she would have come to PNZ, and Mr. Roll here, same thing. They did not come voicing objection at PNZ. PNZ's vote was unanimous. The property behind is all Seventh-day Adventist. As you get further over here, you get into some commercial and some larger housing. The one thing I did want to point out is that if you expand beyond that 1,000-foot test, if you just go a little bit further south, right, so now you're coming down towards Morris on Capon, the lot sizes do drop to 50 feet. So it's just this plat here ended up with 60-foot lots. Some of the older plats ended up with 50-foot lots. If this lot is not split, it's going to be the only 100-foot lot in a far distance. The only objection I received when I talked to people was they did not want one big home on that lot because it would be out of keeping with the neighborhood. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Hamner?
I just got one quick one. Frank, on the map you showed with the X's, what were the lots with the yellow?
The yellow highlights were actually where I went and talked to people.
What are the X's?
The X's are ones where we sent out a letter saying if you have any objection, let us know. We got the green card back, but they did not report any objections. So those are non-resident property owners.
Okay, so the yellow ones you talked to and they had no disagreement.
That's correct. Yes,
thank you.
So the green card is just a receipt.
Just a receipt.
Return receipt requested or something.
Right, and they didn't return any objection to it. And those were all absentee owners. Okay.
So you don't have anybody in here who said they didn't approve.
No one that I talked to and knocked on doors and could talk to him. I received no objections other than they didn't want one big house on that lot.
All right. Thank you, Frank.
And we are prepared to comply with the condition that we bury the architecture of the two homes that go on.
Don't use an X next time. X usually means that you don't like it. Come on.
The first thing I thought
when I looked at it, why is he bringing us that?
Frank's first time up there.
I know.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Nope.
Thank you.
We'll look for a motion.
I'll move it.
I'll second, as recommended by P&Z.
With the different style houses.
That was it.
We haven't taken account. We will in a second. I wanted to give you a motion to react to. So now that we have a motion, we'll. Okay. Any further discussion before I open up the floor? Okay. John? Now's your time. Floor is open for public comment.
Thank you. John Schofield, 358 Victoria Avenue. I own 13 houses in the West Side, and I have a strong preference for modest-sized homes, and I'd like the West Side to be preserved as an area of reasonable-sized homes. When I looked at lot sizes, I am almost the proud owner of one of the smallest lots, which is 2,036 square feet. don't know if this shows up here.
Let's switch that over.
But they vary, they seem to vary from between as little as, so that is a house I built, which is full solar, and it was on a 34-foot lot. And what I think was fascinating is I built this house without any variances because the variance I applied for wanted it to be 3 feet closer to a property that I owned, and it did not get approved. So if I can build a house on a 34-foot lot, this can be done. So I'm in full support of splitting this up because I do not want to see 4,000-square-foot houses sprinkled around the only area remaining with modest-sized homes. Okay.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Ms. Fletcher, and I live at 811 English Court. And I do approve of him splitting the lot because as long as he's building two single-family houses on it, I approve of it. Because what's happened on 811 English Court next door to me, I didn't know that they was building a two-story building next door to my house. Because if I had a, you all would have heard from me. And when I asked them what was they building, the contractor, I asked two of them, and neither one of them could find the front part of the paper, the blueprint, and show me what they was building. They showed me the back of it, but they didn't show me the front of it, and they never came back with me with the front part of it. So I'm glad that he's taking this lot and putting some single-family houses on it, because down the street from 811 English Court, on the left-hand side, there are with a picture, a poster picture up with another $1 million two-story building house, and I mean it's really out the characteristic of the west, what's supposed to be on the west side, and it's just like you all are just—they are just trying to push us out. I know the houses need work done on them, but we're trying to get it together. But putting these two-story building on the west side, I think it was very ridiculous because of the way they was built. And I can jump on Canton. I'm sure you can jump out one one into the other one on those two-story built houses that they built on Canton Avenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fletcher. No jumping, please. Okay, we'll close the floor to public comment. Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? Okay, I take Commissioner Seidel. I take what he said too about providing a little bit more affordable housing. So thank you for that. Okay, Cindy, please read the roll.
Commissioner Seidel.
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle.
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper.
Yes.
Commissioner Wellman.
Yes.
Mayor Leary.
Yes. Thank you. Dan, please.
An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, vacating and abandoning a portion of Warren Avenue right away from Elvin Avenue to the city limit line dedicated by homemakers according to the plat thereof is recorded in plat book M, page 97 of the public records of Orange County, more particularly described in Exhibit A, providing for conflicts, recording, and an effective date.
All right. Thank you.
The city received a request from the master developer of Ravadage to vacate this portion of Lauren Avenue. The portion of Lauren south of this has already been vacated, and Elvin west of this portion has already been vacated, and the vacate limit goes to our city limit line that we share with the city of Maitland. So that's why it doesn't go all the way to Bennett. I understand that the city of Maitland is also acting on the vacation request within its municipal limits.
Okay, questions for staff?
If we go back to the original document for the approval from Orange County, did it anticipate this abandonment?
I'm pretty sure it did, yes.
Do we, yes or no?
Dory?
I'm pretty sure the answer is...
Did the original plat of, or the development order from Orange County show this being abandoned?
Did it?
You know?
Mr. Briggs?
Yes, it did.
It did. Mr. Briggs is saying yes. Okay. Questions for staff? No? Folks, we have a motion?
It's not going to impact anyone that's outside of the Rabidash development? No out parcels that are going to have reduction in their access?
No.
You're okay about that one on the corner? It's okay? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll move it. Okay. Second.
Okay. We'll, would the applicant like to speak? No? Okay. We'll certainly reserve the opportunity after we take public comment. Okay, let's open up the floor to public comment. Any wish to address the commission on this item? Now is your time. Okay, seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. Go ready to vote. Cindy, please read the roll.
Commissioner Sandell?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Walden?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Dan, please.
A resolution of the City Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida, in opposition to the proposed future land use amendment and rezoning for a racetrack gas station development at 2300 South Cimarron Boulevard in Orange County.
Okay, Mr. Briggs.
At the last City Commission meeting, the Commission unanimously asked the staff to put together this resolution to forward down to Orange County Planning and Zoning, as well as the Board of County Commissioners opposing the future land use and rezoning of this tract that you see out there at 2300 South Cimarron Boulevard, going from office to a commercial designation, and the applicant is racetrack gas station, so that's the intended use. As you read in the staff minutes, it's clearly incompatible having a commercial gas station next to a golf course and with it within earshot and eyeshot of the Gulfside single-family neighborhood of the city. It did go to the community meeting that they held at Loma Elementary. Neighbors may not have seen me. I was hiding in the back, but I did look at the sign-in sheet, and 51 of the 53 people that were there were Winter Park residents, everyone being opposed to the request.
So, noise, Jeff, this is in support of Orange County staff recommendation for denial?
It's your request asking those two boards to deny the request. Yes.
Great. And this is also, our staff has also supports that recommendation as well?
That's right.
Thank you.
I'll move it. Second.
Okay. Let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on this item? Now is your time.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Scott Clark of Clark and Albaugh, 700 West Morse Boulevard, Winter Park. I represent the Winter Pines Golf Club and simply wanted to come and briefly speak in favor of the motion. As you can see from the map you've looked, the proposed use opens a window and frankly a horrible and ugly window into a very nice golf course that fits very well within the residential area. And so it's simply incompatible, and we're concerned also that the traffic, because I understand that this is going to be a 24-hour racetrack gas station, the traffic, the transient use, of course, is going to have an open window into our golf course at night, which, of course, puts them at the backyards of hundreds and hundreds of residents. So we simply ask the board to support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Anyone else? And folks, just so again, just to be clear, with this is there is a motion to deny, to support this resolution, and if you, I know some people are kind of wondering, do we need to get up and speak? I'm letting you know this looks pretty good for you.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very pleased that you are entertaining this resolution.
Would you mind stating your name for the record, sir?
My name is Thomas Yost.
Thank you, Mr. Yost.
I'm a volunteer. I work for the neighborhood of Fairway Drive. We have a neighborhood watch organization there. I spent about half of my 80 years living at 1156 Fairway Drive.
We have a big concern about the proposed change to the future land use that the resolution addresses somewhat, light pollution, noise pollution. What's not on there is pollution from gas runoff, oil runoff, fuel runoff into a diminished area of wetlands that is going to be developed right behind our property, right behind the city limits. This is a big concern of mine. Another concern that we have is the issue of drainage. That word is not in the resolution. Maybe you should put it in there. Being a resident on this street for over 40 years, I've seen a few changes. One of the changes, a lot of the properties are becoming more and more rental, not original homeowner. I'm one of the original homeowners there. So I think there's a tendency to get less and less people involved in their neighborhood. We have a good representation here tonight. We are hopeful that you will unitedly and unanimously approve this resolution. I am concerned that down the line, if the issue of drainage is not addressed, it's going to come back to haunt Winter Park in a number of ways, in added cost and damages and whatever else could flow from this. Right now we have a water problem. I can remember a time a few years ago, last century, where I had to actually park my car, get out of the car, and wade home through the water. We have a resident here who can probably attest to the fact that her car just recently washed a little bit away, was moved by the water on Fairway Drive. We have a problem in drainage, and I suspect that we need to send a message and work with Orange County, work with them to come up with a plan that is going to address this big issue of drainage. This water's got to go someplace. You just can't pour concrete, diminish the wetlands, and hope for the best. It's going to come back on our property. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yost. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. I think our staff has heard your concerns about drainage, and hopefully they'll take a peek at it or are aware of it, and anything moving forward on that property will be addressed by our staff working with Orange County. Okay, first of all, I want to thank the neighborhood. The neighborhood is very responsive, and we appreciate all the emails that we've gotten to make us aware of this. I know staff has also been very diligent. Jeff, thank you for attending, even if you were in disguise. But we do appreciate the opportunity to represent you on this to Orange County. Folks, we have a motion. We have a second. Cindy, please read the roll.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Mirren?
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Seidel.
Easiest applause you ever got, isn't it?
Yeah. Commissioner Seidel, it's your turn, sir.
Yeah, no, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd ask the people not leave for a second, because I'm going to talk about something that I think is very important to all of us. You know, I have two daughters at Winter Park High School, and we had a shooting at a high school down in South Florida that was very close to where I was that day. I was working on a project down there, okay? And, you know, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I've been an independent since I was 18. I always like to make up my own mind. And I'm not against guns either. But what bothers me is that there's this perception that guns make us safer somehow, and everyone should have whatever gun they want. Now, for me, I'm going to give you my experience in my life with guns, okay? Greg Seidel's experience with guns is that the first experience I had is a friend of mine that lived in Winter Park was shot in the face at the 7-Eleven about the 1980s. He's alive still, and he's still here in town. I think quite a few might know who that is. My next experience with guns was, I used to work at a company called RS&H. There's a gentleman that used to work here at the city that was let go of RS&H, and he didn't have money for his meds. And he went in RS&H and started shooting his gun and shot five people that I personally know. The one that he killed, I did not know. It was a person that just started there. My next thing where guns were close to me was the Paul shooting, which was right here in my backyard. I didn't know anybody, but I certainly feel bad for everybody involved in that. The next shooting I was involved in was the gentleman that went into the FSU library and started shooting people, shot one of my client's sons. He did not pass away. He's okay. And then The other one is a friend of mine who played in a band. They were taking a break, and someone decided to rob him and shot him in the head and killed him. What I have not had in my life is someone save a life because of a gun. And I just point that out, that everyone's saying that these save lives, but I can't think of one life in my lifetime that I know that was saved by someone having a gun. And so I'm looking for reasonable laws. I would not like to see mentally ill people being able to buy guns, and I think the kids are telling us this. You know, it could have been my daughter that was shot, and it could have been one of our representative's daughters who sits next to her in class could have been shot. But he voted not to even discuss the issue, and I find that despicable. As a parent, we, as the adults in the room, the adults, we're a leading city here, the city of Winter Park, and we need to step up and be leaders and not just brush this off anymore. And I'm okay with guns. I want good people to have guns. I want, if someone comes in the room with a gun, I want that person with a concealed weapon to shoot him so I don't die. I'm okay with that. But these laws, we've got to find where the laws are effective, and we can all work together to get this done. I hate hearing it's about how America is or how America will be. It's about how America should be. And it should be, all of us should be working together to solve problems. So with that, I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Sprinkle.
Well, probably everybody's read something I've written about how opposed I am to guns, and certainly as an educator, I know they have no place in schools, period. That's not even an issue. I don't know what we can do. What I do believe, honestly, is that the children who watched that and saw that and lived through that will change this. I don't know that we can, because we haven't yet. But I do believe it's going to get changed. It has to get changed, because we can't continue to do this to the people that we are going to be living their lives, hopefully. So I understand how you feel, and I feel for you, Greg, because I know exactly what it's like to feel helpless and to walk by and see this. And I always think just what everybody here thinks, which is, what if that was my child? And we all think that, and that's why it's so very difficult. I will say that there's a lot of good things that are going on in our community. I got to go to JFS has a big counseling center over on Lee Road. I had never been to that. What a beautiful, great opportunity that is for people that need counseling to get it close by. And I thought about that. And I thought about the families that are going to need that just because of what we've seen. So I got to do that this past week. We have some other fun things to look forward to that make this city the great city that it is. And I know that one of them is, don't we have a St. Patty's Day parade coming up? And so we have a lot to look forward to. And that's the only thing that can keep people like us that feel deeply, just as deeply as you do, for these families and for these children, and know that sooner or later, this is going to get fixed. I don't have the answer, but it's going to get fixed.
Thank you. Mr. Cooper.
This is such a heavy topic.
Yeah,
and I have some very mundane things I would like to talk to you about, but I have to say I was raised in a military family. My father's a hunter, my dad is a marksman, my grandfather is a marksman, and they have served to defend us. And I have great mixed feelings about guns, especially automatic weapons that are created for mass destruction. So for me, it would be very, very hard to know the right answer, but I've seen enough to know the problem. And the problem starts with the video games, the problem starts with the movies, and until the American people put the family first and stop entertaining our children with violence and creating an environment where they think it's cool to be stoned, it's going to be hard to change. But I think that the change is going to come when we look at every element of our society together, starting with the family, starting with the entertainment, and yes, putting guns only in the hands of people who are mentally competent and physically trained to deal with them. But so if that is something that our commission wants to discuss a resolution on at some point, I would be happy to do that. But for me, it has to be a slow and cautious thought process, because it's not one thing. It's, you know, where are our kids on Sunday? I'm sorry, there's just a lot of values that our families are losing. And I think that's what creates people who are lost and afraid, and they turn to violence. Because why? That's how they entertain themselves as children. So the problem is much, much bigger. But I want to talk about street bricking. I gave each of you...
This is so boring,
I'm sorry. But I gave each of you just some excerpts from the policy. I would very much like for you to take a look at it before we get together, and staff too. I think we can clarify our policy better, because I do see some inconsistency in the way the policy is. So I would love for you to look at it. I would love for Randy to consider it. If staff and we believe that we should maybe make some adjustments, I think that's a good idea. And the question is, which is a better way? Is it better one vote, one share, or is it better, you know, a weighted vote and a weighted share? I don't think we should mix the two. It shouldn't be one vote and a weighted share. It should be either one vote, one share, or one weighted vote, one weighted share. And I'm indifferent as to how we do it. I just like it to be clear in our policies, and that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Wilden. Commissioner Wilden.
I hope everybody has a great week and a very happy weekend coming up, and I think our city's doing fantastic, and I'm thrilled to be a part of making it fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Regarding the gun issue, all I will say is we should expect our leaders to get in a room and figure these things out rather than demonize one another every opportunity they get. The solution's out there. It doesn't seem as though it would be that complex. But the tenor these days in Washington, in Tallahassee, and elsewhere prevents those conversations. I wanted to say thank you to Ronnie Moore. Ronnie, I met you at Babe Ruth early, throwing out the pitch for the opening of Babe Ruth season. How'd I do, by the way?
Very well.
Yeah.
Very
strong. Yeah, I stuck that, didn't I? I stuck that opening pitch. Thank you. I didn't throw the...
He does a great job. Ronnie Moore.
But no, I'm not done, because then Ronnie was also at the Restore the Roar. So I think from 8... Oh, heck. I was there at 8 or so. You were probably there at 6 o'clock in the morning getting those fields ready. The fields were great. We had, I don't know how many hundreds of children out there, close to 400 children and their parents. It was an absolutely great day to be out there in the morning and just seeing the youth of this community get together to you know, it was about community. And it was very cool. Young boys, young girls, t-ball, softball. It was a very cool morning. And then we ended up the evening at Restore the Roar, where I don't think you left those fields all day. You helped them get that ready. It was a great event there, too. So, Ronnie, I just wanted to call out special recognition for you for all you do for the city. It was great. Folks, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you all.